It was very nice to be here at the perimeter. And I think for such a short stay, it was very productive. So let me just review what we did so far, and then I will move to the interoperability for the full planar spectrum of ADS-CFT, where we will try to surpass the limitations we saw in the previous lectures.
So as I told you, the dilatation operator of n equals 4 super young Mills could in principle be computed in perturbation theory. We have a nearest neighbor Hamiltonian, which is just the Heisenberg spin chain. Then we got something up to the 2 loops, 3 loops, and 4 loops. It's also known, although I did not write. To one loop, we could diagonalize completely these equations. We did it in the, we did it on Friday, and we find these beta equations, which tell me that if I pick the particle and carry it around the ring, I get a phase whenever I meet one of the other particles. And the total phase should be trivial. And I get these equations in product form. And then there are two possible generalizations when, once I have the one loop with equations for the SU2 spectrum. On the one hand, I can go to more loops. On the other hand, I can try to generalize to more operators. So generalizing to more loops, it was what I already said. There is one loop, 2 loops, 3 loops, 4 loops. And it seems that in the SU2 sector, the effect of more loops can be encoded simply into this equation, where I basically modify my dispersion relation, this term here, e to the I momenta times L. It's slightly deformed. These variables x plus and x minus appear. The S matrix is almost the same, and there is a dressing factor here which appears only at 4 loops. So up to this 3 loops, I only have this part without a dressing factor. The dressing factor starts appearing here at 4 loops. Yes.
So you said if you just look at the Hamiltonian, it's not integrable in the way. So why do people think that it's useful?
No, it's integrable in perturbatively, as I said. So perturbatively, yeah, that perturbatively they could compute the spectrum.
Yeah, I want to claim that it's pretty cool. I will find the spectrum exactly for any couple. So in this equation here, then is expected to interpolate between weak and strong coupling. So I, you can also expand it at strong coupling.
So when they compute the 2 loops, they manage to diagonalize more.
Not forcefully. I mean, when you compute that 2 loops, you stop here. Now you don't diagonalize this system at finite g. You diagonalize this system perturbatively in g. To diagonalize this system truncated here at finite g, that makes no sense. So if you truncate, you must solve perturbatively. If you consider everything, you might expect to treat here finite g. So what is the, what are these variables x plus x minus? Here in the middle board, I wrote all the definitions one needs if one wants to put into the computer and compute the planar spectrum of ADS-CFT up to wrapping order. So x plus and x minus, they parameterize the momenta, and they are given by this deformation of u. X is similar to, when g is small, it's just u, and then there is this 1 over x here, which corrects this x, so it's like a deformation. They are called the Joukowsky variables, because this x plus 1 over x map was introduced by Joukowsky to study airplanes, basically, the wing of the airplane. So these Joukowsky maps, they are just a deformation. When you go to one loop, this becomes the x becomes just u, and in terms of this x minus, these are the all of the equation. A perhaps more simple generalization consists in going from SU2 to 2,2/4, but still at one loop. So still at one loop, I call that there is a general formalism for treating these equations for integrable nearest neighbors Hamiltonians with some Dinkin labels and some Cartan matrix. So I choose the Cartan matrix of 2,2/4, the Dinkin labels of the field strength, and then the equations are encoded in this way. So I have now my variables u, j of type 1 up to u, j of type 7, which is the rank of 2,2/4. I have k1 of this one, k7 of this one. And I must solve this bit equation. And this gives me, this diagonalizes me the full 2,2/4 bit equations. Any questions here? So then we move to all loops and to the all sector. To do so, it was important to change language, to pass from a spin chain Hamiltonian to the language of Magnan S matrix. So the symmetry of the Angletonian is, of course, 2,2/4, encoded by that Cartan matrix. The symmetry of the magnets is the residual symmetry, which rotates the magnets among themselves, was 2/2 extended squared. There was 2 copies of 2/2. Then this is quite powerful, because symmetry plus some extra input, like crossing symmetry, etc. But basically, this symmetry, so for the moment, constrains completely this S matrix. And it allows us to fix the S matrix as some matrix part, which was 2 copies of 2/2, plus an unknown dressing factor, which is the dressing factor. Which
yeah, so why is this sigma the same as this sigma?
So, okay, let me explain.
I mean, is it too technical?
No, it is not technical at all, but it will be clear here. So, okay, we have the S matrix, how to work with the S matrix? So what we did is, we constructed a transfer matrix, a product of S matrices, where I have my physical momenta P1 up to PM, and then some ghost momenta P, which goes around, and this transfer matrix depends on P. So it is represented graphically by this object here. And then I said that there's something nice. When P is equal to PJ, when this S matrix becomes S matrix with the same arguments, it becomes just a permutator, and I get this picture. So it means this picture that I have a particle, I carry it around the ring, and it goes to the same point. And this is precisely what bit equations mean. So bit equations, they can be recast in the following form. I have an exponential, I have a dressing factor, times these transfer matrices, I forgot to tell, at P equal to PJ should be equal to the same wave function. The point is that these objects here, being transfer matrices, are very natural objects from the integrable point of view, and I can diagonalize it completely and compute their eigenvalues, which I call also by TLR without hat. So now you see what is sigma. So sigma here, it appears immediately. So this times this transfer matrix, right? What I want to say. Okay, let me advance a bit more. It will become clear in a minute. And then this transfer matrix is here, I'm sorry, can be diagonalized. And here is the eigenvalue. And to diagonalize them, I need to introduce extra quantum numbers for this psi, which parameterize the 2/2 plane waves, the left ones and the right ones. The left ones, they are parameterized by the beta roots u1 up to u3. And the right ones, they are parameterized by the beta roots u5 up to u7. So for the left one, I would get some function of Baxter polynomials, Qs, R, and Bs, where Qs, R, and Bs are just polynomials which encode the position of the beta roots. And this function seems to have poles, and when I cancel the poles between the several terms, I obtain the bit equations for the spin waves, because we knew that this object should not have poles. Once I find this eigenvalue, plus the 6-bit equations, I plug it into this expression, I impose that it's equal to 1, and I get a 7-bit equation. So now look here, and imagine I excite nothing at all. So all Qs are trivial, basically. I excite nothing at all. And then when I put them here, these T's I don't care, I get just this simple S2 equation. So this sigma basically, okay, let me put sigma tilde here. This sigma tilde is not exactly this sigma. It's this sigma times this factor here. Right? Then it's.
With what you said before.
Yeah. And you see, you identify what is. By the way, here I think there are. I think there are two wrong signs.
So should I keep on a sigma tilde as sigma fair times a scattering matrix or the magnets themselves? Is that the
Again? Sigma?
Sigma tilde is the phase factor.
Yes. Sigma tilde is the scattering between the magnets themselves. It includes the negative one plus the dressing factor. Sorry. Because when you drop this part, I get just this is trivial and I get just this equal one.
And so we'll take the trace to define the transfer radius. Uh-huh. We have to use the momentum of it. So you think about P.
So here I quantize the momenta. It's in this theory which has 2/2 symmetry. I did not impose that the total momenta is zero. This is something I impose by hand. So furthermore, I should impose that the total momenta is zero because I'm describing traces or things.
So sigma is trace over what?
Sorry?
When they can trace, it's the same. Trace over what?
trace over this auxiliary space. So each S matrix here acts between a physical space, in this case the physical space M, and some auxiliary space. And when I make the product of all of them, this object here, it was this monodromy matrix. It's an object which has opening, this is on the quantum space, plus an auxiliary space here. So all these matrices, they share one auxiliary space, and they are multiplied along the auxiliary space, and then at the end, the trace is taken.
The auxiliary space is characterized by group depths of...
The auxiliary space, it's like another particle, an extra particle with momentum p. So now I have p1 up to pm, and then an extra particle p, which scatters with all the other ones, and then I take the trace over it.
Right, but you don't really integrate over p, so keep p as...
You keep p.
I see.
And then you plug p equal to pj, and it becomes a physical part.
So you do not sum over p, but you sum over the framework index of that part.
I sum over the possible polarizations of p. Good point.
Yes.
Exactly. And that's quite important, indeed. That's my next point.
So sigma tilde is just like sigma depends only on p. It doesn't just do one.
No.
This extra.
That's right. Okay, so as you see, here I wrote everything there is to know. We, as Evgeny pointed out, here there is an extra factor which I forgot. U minus U prime plus I, U minus U prime minus I. So once you parameterize this sigma in this way, this chi was given by this integral representation, the Baxter functions encode the position of the beta root, and then here are the 7-bit equations. So you see that if you cancel this pole with this pole, you get, for example, this equation here, and you can see that you get this 7-bit equation. You get these first three, then there is this middle mode one, which is more complicated, and then there are the last three, which are just copies of the first three. So with this blackboard, one can put in a computer and compute the exact spectrum of the theory up to the wrapping orders, and this is what I'm now going to explain. How to...
So the expression for the energy is fixed by the symmetry.
It's fixed by the symmetry also, as I told you. Okay, so if there is no further questions, I'd like to move on. And now I want to consider the first leading corrections, the first leading wrapping corrections. So I want to consider a 1+1 dimensional quantum field theory. So I'm now not thinking about spin chains, I think I have some quantum field theory, and I want to put this quantum field theory in a large circle. So let's suppose the mass or the dispersion relation, I don't care, in infinite volume is known. And suppose I want to compute the mass in finite volume or the dispersion relation in finite volume. I want to understand how to correct it and how this infinite volume expression becomes a finite volume one. So if I can compute this infinite volume mass, it means that I'm capable of computing the self-energy completely. I can correct completely the self-energy, and by correcting completely the self-energy, I can compute the whole of the propagator and understand all this mass.
So now, what I want to understand, if this is the self-energy, I want to understand what is the correction to the self-energy when I put it in finite volume. This, of course, is related to the correction, to the mass. And this is what I want to understand. What is this correction? So I should make first a brief motivation. The reason why I'm considering this 1+1 dimensional field theory will be, of course, because I will now try to go to this dual picture where I will think in terms of string theory. And recall that the picture I have here when I study some system with momenta J is that I have my string, which was a string of size j, and I have some magnons with momenta p scattering on this string. So a string is just a 1+1 dimensional field theory, which is string theory, and I want to study this dimension when j is 4, for example, to compute the anomalous dimension of Kanish. So I need to understand how to understand this integrable quantum field theory in finite volume. So this is a relevant problem for us. So how to compute the correction to the self-energy when I put the particle in finite volume. So, you see, any question here? So this is generic for any one plus one dimensional field theory. It need not be integrable or anything. Actually, it doesn't even need to be one plus one dimensional. So let's understand what are the new graphs, the new virtual processes which appear when I put my particle in finite volume. So in terms of one particle irreducibles diagrams, I have this diagram where I have a 4-point interaction. Here, by this blob, I mean that if I sum to all loops, I compute everything. And I have some physical particle with momenta A and P, and then I scatter it with another particle with polarization B, polarization B and say Q. So this second, this index here is polarization. So this polarization exactly like you said, which is summed over in that picture there. So we have some polarization here and some momenta Q, and we have this diagram. What else do we have? There are basically three possibilities. We have the possibility using 3-point irreducible of this one. Here I'm writing the leading virtual process, where one particle goes around the world once. Of course, all the other processes where we have one particle going around the world twice or two particles going around the world, of course, everything is subleading. So this is just the leading quantum process, where I have one virtual process which wraps the cylinder. And finally, I have the tadpole diagram like this. So these are the only three diagrams which I can have when I consider, when I put my theory in finite volume. And let's consider what these diagrams are. So what is this? This is an integral. Then there is a propagator, 1 over Q naught square plus epsilon of type for particles of type B of Q1 square. This is the propagator, this propagator which goes along here. Then I have a 4-point function between polarizations AB and AB of PQ minus Q, which is a shell, of course. And this propagator, I mean Fourier. So this propagator, normally there is e to the i momenta times space. And I periodized it. I went in one, I wrap the cylinder in one direction, and I can wrap in the other direction. So here, I should also have a sum over e plus minus Q1 times L times I, because of wrapping in one direction and in the other direction. If I do it carefully, it's not, you can do it if you want slowly, but slower, but this is the result that you get. Any question about this? So there is the wrapping in one direction, wrapping in the other direction. This is this exponential here, which appears in the propagator. If I compute the full periodized propagator, I would have the full, all these powers. And then I have this propagator, this, the usual pole. And then a 4-point function.
Under?
Sine of Q.
Sine?
If you go in the other direction, it's like keeping the sine of Q.
No, I wrote here. It depends on this Q, it's the 2 moment. I mean, it depends on PQ minus P minus Q. I have PQ minus P minus Q. If you invert it, it's the same diagram. No, it does not. It does not depend on the sine.
So Q1 is not quantized here?
Q1 here is not quantized. It's virtual. It's a virtual loop. But now what I do, I will deform this contour and pick the pole at Q1. I will deform this contour and pick the pole at Q1 of this propagator. So then it will be on shell. So this Q1 will be on shell. I have to deform up or down. So for one exponential, I deform up. For the other, I deform down. Let's consider just one exponential. So when we deform, we will get an integral over dq naught. Now I will forget about constants. Then this propagator just means that it's on shell. I get exponential of q1 l I, but now this q1 is on shell. Let's put a star to denote that it's on shell. And then we get this 4-point function, which is now on between on shell states, which I represent in this way, p, q, p. So I have this forward scattering, which is now on shell. And if I do the same for the other diagrams, for all these other diagrams, what I then find is that they will give the following the four ways to cut this diagram. Here there are two ways to cut. Here there are two ways to cut. So the four ways to cut this diagram give me precisely this, where these diagrams are on the shelf. But this is great because this object here, summing over all possible channels, is precisely the S matrix. It's a non-shell, a physical quantity. It's a non-shell, like sum over all channels of the all possible four-point functions. Actually, it's the S matrix minus one because it's a forward scattering amplitude, but that's a detail we will not care about. And therefore, we get the nice expression, if we put all the factors correctly, that the correction to the mass is given by an integral over the energy of the particle, e to the I Q1 times L, and then there is an S matrix. Let me now reintroduce these indexes A and B. A is physical, B is not physical, of physical momenta P, and this virtual, this momenta Q1, and I sum over B, over the polarizations B. So I get something like this. This is, of course, very schematic, but this is the correction to the mass that I get when I put when I put some theory which I know how to solve in infinite volume in finite volume. And the result only depends on the infinite volume data, of course, the S matrix. Now, what we want to say? Okay, so it only depends on the S matrix. Notice that this is quite powerful. What I wrote here, I could have written here a d-dimensional integral. It would be for a d-dimensional theory where I period when I put the theory then in a big hyper box. So I have here some d dimensions. I periodize here. Notice that I only periodize in space. I could also pick a propagator. I would also get the S matrix. The only difference would be that I would have an S matrix which would depend now on the transverse momenta, and the transverse spatial momenta would still be integrated. But these Luscher formulae, they are quite general. This is due to Luscher. These are what are called the Luscher corrections. And these Luscher corrections, they don't depend on whether the model is integrable or whether it's 1 plus 1 dimensional. But for integrable 1 plus 1 dimension, the formula is particularly useful because on the one hand, we have a single integral, and on the other hand, for integrable models, we often know the S matrix exactly. So the motivation of Luscher actually was somehow to go the other way around. From extracting the lattice data, where you would compute the mass in some lattice, you could extract information about the infinite volume S matrix. So his motivation in the 80s was a bit. So what do we have then if we adapt these formulas? I already adapted a bit to non-relativistic models by introducing here a more general dispersion. But what will we get if we now consider many particles? So if we consider now this picture where we have a string and we have many particles. And then what we get is the following, is that the correction to the energy due to wrapping will be, again, schematically given by an integral over a virtual particle Q. Then there is this periodicity, Q1 times L. And then, again, now the picture which I have, here the picture which I have is I have a cylinder, I have some physical particle, and the virtual particle goes around. Now I have many physical particles, so now the picture which I have some theory, I have some physical particles, and then a virtual particle which goes around. So here I should now include an S matrix where I scatter the virtual particle with the first physical, then second physical, then third physical. But what is this object? This object is the transfer matrix. The object where I pick a particle, scatter with all other particles, and sum with the same final and initial is precisely a trace. This is precisely transfer matrix. Whereby this T, what do I mean? I mean product of this sigma BS times T left times T right. Right? So this T here, which is, of course, a trace of the S matrices, which is what we need to
to compute then the correction to the when I put this the, my state in finite form. The integral is all over the on-shell momenta. You can think either energy or momenta because they are related. So it's either Q0 or Q1 because they are related. So you can change variables from one to the other. Okay, so let me write, this was everything schematically here. Let me write it not schematically. Let me write it correctly for ADS-CFT in the variables that are useful to parameterize ADS-CFT, which is this U. Yes.
That is supposed to hold exactly or only to the order of separation theory.
So that's a good point. So this plus order. So in case there is a mass, it's something like e to the minus 2ml, there's 2 here. So this is an expansion, in our case it's plus order g to the 2l. So this is an expansion which is, okay, from this point of view it's a perfect equation, but it's an expansion in volume. So here I'm assuming that I'm resumming everything in coupling. This is an exact, here I have the whole loop for point function. So here I get the whole loop S matrix.
But this seems to be the case that when you really have that, the virtual particle is going about loop, you are not correcting it by self empty correction or all the other things. So even.
Oh, okay, actually I am, because what I have here just one particle, so I don't consider two loops, etc., because this is it's further suppressed in L. But when I put this virtual particle, I put it completely dressed by its exact dispersion relation in infinite volume. So it's already assuming that the particle is dressed.
Do you mind if I just ask, what is the third diagram? So what is the third?
The third diagram is a tadpole, which you might impose that it's zero at infinite volume, but when you put in finite volume, if before your prescription was that it vanished in infinite volume, it does not vanish in finite volumes.
But I think you're missing a line.
Yeah, you're missing your line.
Ah, of course I'm missing a line.
Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, so if I do it correctly, I have something like this. Because of the kinematic factors, which I was never careful about, I have some. And because of this change of variables from, you said, from Q1 to Q0, I have derivative of epsilon b of u. And then I get x minus over x plus to the j times the transfer matrix. Now, times the transfer matrix for virtual particle of type B. For virtual particle of type B. So now here comes an extra ingredient. So we consider, so this is basically the Lucier formula. We consider the following feature. We have a virtual particle with momenta Q, and we scatter with a physical particle. Now, in this theory, what is this virtual particle? This virtual particle is a fundamental representation of SU2 slash. It's a fundamental magnet. It's the usual particle in the fundamental of 2 slash, or of 2 slash 2 squared. Now, but, as we discussed in the first lecture, there are bound states in this bit and that stuff. So actually, there are particles in this theory, there are bound states, which transform into higher representations of 2 slash 2. So from this point of view of this BEF, I can see that I have these poles in U, I have these poles here, and these poles here, they are extra bound states of the theory. So the theory has bound states. It has other particles with other representations. So if I want to sum, to do this properly, where I have to sum over all possible things which go around, I should also consider the case where I have, for example, a more complicated state going around, a bound state, say, of 2, of length 2. Yeah, yes?
So, string theory also have twisted sectors which don't fall into diagrammatic thing, but this will be the bound state that goes all around.
Yeah. Twisted sectors? I don't know what it is.
Maybe you will ask again in a minute, yeah. Because hopefully it will become clear. I hope. I don't know how to answer that question. Okay, so I have this transfer matrix where I have here a fundamental particle, but I should also consider two boxes and three boxes and so on. I should consider all possible parts. So let me then write the final expression. The final expression is that I should have a sum over B, epsilon B, T, say, okay, T B, where by this B I mean that I have a bound state of B particles. And then, again, remember that for bound states, when I compute the momentum, it was not u plus I over 2 over u minus I over 2. It was u plus I n over 2 over u minus I n over 2, the momentum of these strings. So the momentum of this bound state is parameterized by an extra b here. B. So here it means shift by I b over 2. So
b labels just like this.
B labels the number of boxes.
Or any representation.
Only these ones, because only these ones, they are the representation of 2/2, the representation of the physical particles. And then the other possible bound states, they are just taken into account already when I trace over here, over the polarization. I only need to take these ones into account. These are all the only bound states of the theory. If you look, the only physical, the only particle bound states. Right? You look and you see only this pulse, so there is only a discrete, a number, which is this anti-symmetric. So these are the bound states of the theory. Mm-hmm. The rest is, then for each type of bound state, right, I consider I have particles in this representation. As you said, I still need them to sum over all possible polarizations, because when I have some representation, the magnets transform in some multiplet inside this representation. Right? And this is taken into account by the trace. Okay, so this is something. So this is something that we must reproduce if we want to find some system of equations which describe exactly the spectrum of ABS-CFT. But before that, let me just tell, so this is what we are going to do today. So in a minute I will start describing our work. So let's, I just want to be completely explicit about how can you then compute this wrapping interaction for a given state. So for example, how to compute delta E wrapping for the state, for example, for condition, for example, from trace zx squared. So what are the needed ingredients? So you need a dispersion relation, this you have. You need this x plus and x minus, you also have. You will integrate over u. Everything here depends on u. And then you need this transfer matrix. So basically, to understand, I should tell you how to construct this transfer matrix in a general representation. And now, there is a very nice story about how to relate transfer matrices in several representations. In the same way, so what is a particle with two boxes? It's a bound state of two particles, and with three boxes, a bound state of three particles. So of course, it's natural that I can build the transfer matrices in higher representations from the building, from more fundamental building blocks. In the same way that I could write these characters, this relation for characters, we saw yesterday, where we could relate characters in different representations between one another. So, and there is the next relation, which is the following. Let's consider as for characters representations with A boxes here and S boxes here, for which, I recall, we had the following relation. The character square was equal to the character A S plus 1, character A, S minus 1, plus character A plus 1, S, character A minus 1, S. And then if I consider transfer matrices in representation A and S, they will again be fused because they are built of more fundamental particles. And the nice relation between these transfer matrices is as follows. I have T, A, S, which now depends on U, and I have plus and minus. Let me recall that F plus minus is just F of u plus minus I over 2. So I'm always using this superscript plus and minus to denote shifts by I over 2. And then TAS plus TAS minus, exactly like the first term there, is equal to TAS plus 1, TAS minus 1, plus TA plus 1, S, TI minus 1, S. And this is the equation. And as I told you, this was a simpler version of Hirota where there is no shifting. So first of all, notice that this is perfectly consistent. So, okay, you cannot notice, yeah. So, because I forgot, okay. Actually, it can be seen that this relation is a particular case of this one when the spectral parameter goes to infinity. The dependence drops out and you get precisely the first relation. Okay, so we have this powerful Hirota equation, which basically relates T's in several representations. And this equation, it's possible to solve it, and it's possible to find the T's in any representation, which are the ones we need to consider with some B boxes. So the idea, so let's try, let me just explain a bit more the analogy with characters. In characters, you also have a generating function, W of Z, which is something like the determinant of 1 over 1 minus a group element G times Z. And this is given, okay, when I have the inverse of this, is given by a sum of minus 1 to the 8, the character in antisymmetric times Z to the 8, a generating function for the character. And here it turns out that there exists also a very nice generating function for this T's, which is as following. I have my T of B times minus 1 to the B times what plays the role of Z is now a shift operator, e to the minus I shift in U times B units, so it's the equivalent of Z to the B. I construct this object, I sum over from B equals 0 to infinity. This is the right-hand side, and to find each coefficient, I can use an alternative formula, the equivalent of this left-hand side, which is the following. I pick tau 1 plus e to the minus I du, tau 2 plus e to the minus I du minus 1, e top is what is here, with tau 3 and here with tau 4, where this tau 1, tau 2, and tau 3, and tau 4, this here is tau 1, this here tau 2, this here tau 3, and this here tau 4. So in terms of the building blocks of the first one, I can generate so I have this expression here. I can expand this right-hand side. And by picking the several coefficients, I read off the transformators in the several presentations.
So this is a formal differential operator.
This is a shift operator. Now I can consider that I put here some probe function f of u, and I read the several terms which are shifted, and I read the coefficients tb. Okay? So notice that then there is a very precise way to compute this wrapping interaction, this leaving wrapping correction, to a given state. So first, I compute the transformators in any representation for this formula. And I get a function of u, which depends on this tau 1, tau 2, tau 3, and tau 4. And then I plug it just into this expression here. Now if you, and this can be done in a very efficient way. And moreover, it turns out that this term here, if we analyze it carefully, it's of order g to the 2j, that this dispersion there. And therefore, just one second. It turns out that this part, that this prefactor here, it's of order g to the 2j. And therefore, when I compute these transformators, which I just told you how to compute them from this generating function, we only need the leading order position. We only need uj to the order 0, computed to the leading order, from the one loop bit equations. So basically, the propagation consumes all powers of g, and then in the scattering, we can consider it to be just the one loop scattering. It's the propagation which carries this, which gives me the powers of g. Exactly like in the other picture, it was this propagation, right, this e to the I q1 times l, which gave me the suppression, and when it scatters, I don't need to expand it further in L.
Sorry, can I ask you, maybe Lazar, did you explain what is the definition of tau I?
Tau I is a function of u, which is given here. Tau 1 of u, tau 2 of u, tau 3 of u, and tau 4 of u. So tau I is a function of u, and it encodes the positions of the u1j, of the beta roots. Right? So it's a function of the spectral parameter u, which is the virtual particle, and of the physical radius. So for a given state, with a given set of beta roots, I compute this tau I, I compute t. I only need to compute this u's to leading order here. I put them in t's, and I can compute the Repin interaction. So there is this infinite sums. So for example, so there is this infinite sums. And so for example, for Konishi, we find that the anomalous dimension is equal to something plus, and then there is this g to the eighth term. And if you compute this infinite sum over b, zeta functions start appearing, and you have some zeta 5 plus 864 zeta 3 plus 324. So this is something you compute the leading order position for two magnets, only two in this case. You don't put any U1s or U2s or U3s or U5 or U6 or U7s because those are SU2/2 wings. You just put two roots of type U4, you put them into the TIs, you compute these Ts, you plug and you sum. So it's completely explicit. It's really one page in Mathematica. And we get this G to the eighth term with this zeta function here. And this was computed by Yannick and Banya. And it's quite a remarkable computation, if you think, because if you want to do it from the n equals 4 point of view, you will have to sum Feynman diagrams, renormalize, take all these counter turns. So technically, it's much more complicated. For example, to compute this in components, you have to sum 130,000 diagrams. So, and in superspace, it's only a couple of thousands, but still quite a lot of diagrams. And actually, it was previously computed by a group of people from Italy, by Zanon et al. And they have computed, and they have this coefficient. They have this coefficient, and here they have something like 200 something. And then Yannick published, and on the day after they corrected, they found the symmetry factor, which was missing in one of the final theorems. So it's really quite remarkable that this computation, this Lucher formula, which is so worldship inspired, it's really a two-dimensional integral, and computing the energy of these two-dimensional objects. And then it reproduces this completely different computation from four dimensions where you sum thousands of diagrams and all the factors come out right. So I think it's probably maybe the most mentally check of ADSFT or one of the most.
Sorry, can I ask something about this Lucher formula here? Mm-hmm. I mean, originally, the original idea of this integrable system long, long time ago was to say that the transform matrix was like, the generalization of Fourier transformation. Where it would be exactly like the plane wave expression P. And in some sense, this formula is exactly the expression of that, right? So that the energy is just, exponential IP times exponential IP, the real one. So it looks like it's you see what I'm saying? That originally, the original idea was, there was this idea that, the transform matrix is like finding the right nonlinear Fourier transformation.
Yes.
On Facebook. But I don't know.
Yes,
it's just very
interesting.
Okay. I mean,
it seems like it's a very natural. I know this analogy, but in a completely different language.
Because here we're just taking integral yeah. dE of essentially yeah. something which is exponential minus PL times the TB, which is exponential minus the P physical.
Yes, yes, I understand what you're saying. You're saying like a Fourier transform. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, in for this closure, yes. But for the full formula, it's a bit more complicated. I don't see.
No, for this thing.
Yes. Maybe. I have nothing very smart to say about it. Maybe it's. Yeah, that's a good one.
So, the use of this is not to check with ADSFT, but both computations. So this computation, in using integrability and another computation using Feynman, both are computations in gate theory.
No. This one is completely in string theory, in the sense that. What did we do here? We pick a one poisson dimensional light cone gauge string theory. And we are computing, right? Because everything here, so, okay, we have this S matrix, which you can say that it comes from gauge theory because what I described is from gauge theory. But this S matrix is also the S matrix of the world sheet magnets. And when I'm considering these integrals over Q1 and Q0, I'm thinking in world sheet, right? Because in spin chain, you don't have this Q1 and Q0. So I'm completely in this worldship where I have two momenta and where I have continuum, and then I scatter my particles in this worldship. What I am doing is I'm going to the extreme limit where this S matrix is very strongly coupled. I'm going to the extreme, to the very strong couple, strongly coupled string. But the picture you have in mind is a string of some size and some excitations on the string. Otherwise, this computation, this whole idea of Q1, Q2, this, it's a world shape. It's the world shape, it's momentum, two-dimensional. In two dimensions, it's two-dimensional field theory.
So you use the S matrix of the large field theory?
Yes, which is the same as the world shape. Maybe I should say. So this S matrix that we compute is the same as the S matrix of the magnets of the world shape. This object, as I told, this object, they are mapped to magnets. And the scattering of magnets is described by the scattering of these magnets here. The scattering of the world shape magnets is the scattering of the spin chain magnets. So there is, the ADFCFT relates this object in this nice way. A spin is mapped to a fluctuation in the string. So, yes? So I have, if I have my string with some fluctuations, this is the dual of some momenta p with some momenta p. Right? And then if these two fluctuations, p and k, I have p and k, and they scatter here, and they scatter here. So these pictures are dual. But here, I have one plus one dimensional field theory. And here I have a quantum spin chain.
Right. So interesting. So the S matrix. Okay. So the matrix form of the S matrix was determined by just symmetry.
Yes.
And so this dressing and factor.
The dressing factor is some function which interpolates between string and weak coupling, and I can expand this both at weak coupling or at strong coupling also. So I didn't describe much about what is the strong coupling limit of this dressing phase and how to recover string theory, but this is because I have to choose something to leave out. So it's true that this dressing factor has also a nice expansion at strong coupling, where it reproduces classical strings plus semi-classical strings. And there were many checks of strong coupling equations. So this, it's really the same, the very same equations they describe all the way from gauge to string, except that it's always in this asymptotic sense that I'm losing wrapping interactions.
So in this discussion of Feynman diagrams,
yes.
In the one dimensional theory, uh-huh. So this is only valid in the continuous
field theory. So
you cannot make this discussion
in the spin chain.
Not
in
the spin chain.
No. So this is where it's typically a string.
Then you talked about conditional operator that is on the field spin.
Conicius four spins, two spins. Yeah. What's the problem? You mean that L is not big?
Yes.
Yeah, but the leading correction is G to the 2L, anyway. So, and this is the leading correction to finite volume when I am at weak coupling. So, I mean, then I can put whatever L I want. It just tells me that it's a G to the 8 correction. If L was bigger, it would be a G to the 16. Right. The first correction in finite wrapping comes at order g to the 2L. If L is 4, then it's a correction at g to the 8. So it turns out that when g is small, the expansions are not completely independent, because it's not really an expansion in L and g. They are connected, right?
So that result is sort of the leading check for the wrapping.
Yes. This would be the leading wrapping interaction, both at weak and at strong coupling. At weak, it would be a correction of the form g to the L. At strong coupling, it would be another exponential suppression. So, but I really need to move on, otherwise I will not speak about what we did. So what is then the idea if I have some field theory which I could solve in infinite volume, and now I want to solve it at finite L? So what we do is the following. So we have this theory in finite L, and suppose I want to compute the ground state energy of the theory for any finite L, and I want to compute it itself. So how to do it? So we have this finite L, and we put it here on an infinite temperature R, an infinite temperature. So I put it here a direction R which goes to infinity. And I put it in this temperature and I identify. So this side I identify with this one. So here I'm computing this path integral, and this path integral then is given by e to the minus r times the ground state energy of L, because I consider r going to infinity. So this is how, when I read the sum of states in this channel. But now I can do the following trick. This is when I look it from this side. I can look it from this side and say that now, let me think of this path integral as this direction being space and this one being time. But then what I have is e to the minus r times f of L, where this f now is a free energy per unit length at some temperature, which is 1 over L. So that's good. I can trade the computation of the ground state energy by the computation of the free energy, of the thermodynamic free energy, where now I have a huge R and I compute the free energy, and it's extensive and I have a notion of free energy per unit length. So in this channel, the Beat and Zatz equation are exact, whereas in this channel, the Beat and Zatz equation, they are approximate. And with this trick, I can compute the exact ground state energy. The Beat and Zatz description in this channel is exact. I have a huge circle and just finite temperature. Here there is no wrapping interactions, and here there are wrapping interactions.
So you mean L times F of L or R?
No, R. R is the length and F is the free energy per unit length. Right? R is this length, so the free energy will be proportional to this length. So from this identification, I read that E0 of L is equal to F of L. Okay. So how to compute the free energy? Well, the free energy in a CFT, what will it be? It will be given now by a sum over all possible now type of bound states of Beat equations, exactly like in SU2. Now I'm just doing like in SU2. Then I have an integral, densities of that possible state, times energies of that possible state, plus an entropy, rho bar A, log of 1 plus rho A over rho bar A, plus, there was another term, similar. And then, you recall that when I minimize this delta F equals 0, this is general TBA for any possible system, when I minimize delta TBA equals 0, I got the following equations. I get YA is equal to some, YA is equal to some kernel BA acting on log of 1 plus YA plus some L times some momenta of U, something like this. Momentum of particle A. This was minimization of delta F.
Wait, is it momentum or energy?
Subject to Beat and Zatz equation. Okay, that's a very good point that I forgot completely to mention. So now we are doing this computation. Here I'm writing a general computation of how to compute the free energy for a generic theory with some index A, where particles have some index A. If we want to apply it with the CFT, what should we keep in mind? We should keep in mind the following. In a relativistic theory, this theory and this theory, they are the same, because the theory is relativistic invariant. So to look it in this channel and in this channel is the same. In our theory, it is not. So what we call here energy and momenta, in this side of the theory, I should weak rotate, and I have here e momenta and I energy. So I should exchange momenta and energy.
So I did not do the relativistic, so this is the RC theory of the string.
But it's like Von Gauge. So the dispersion relation is the square root of 1 plus sine square of p. So basically we have epsilon square is equal to 1 plus 16 g square sine square of p over 2. This is, if you want, for the physical theory. And then we will have a Miber theory, which is the theory which lives in the other channel, which was studied by Arutunov and Frolov. And for this mirror theory, what you have, you do weak rotate, and you get here I epsilon I p square, which is minus p square, is equal to 1 minus 16 g square, sinh square of v over 2. So now you invert, and you get a new dispersion relation. So here energy was square root of 1 plus sine square. Here now energy is arc sinh of 1 plus p square, something like this. And this is the dispersion relation of the mirror theory. So I should start, as Evgeny said, I should start with energy and momenta of the mirror theory. And then at the end, if I do it carefully, what it turns out is that I get the momenta of the physical theory, if I start with energy of physical, because of all these weak rotations. But I don't want to lose much time on these details. But this is an important point, indeed, that the physical and mirror theory are not the same. But this is no obstacle for us, because it only tells me that here I have ground state energy of my physical theory. And it's obtained by computing the free energy per unit length at this temperature for the mirror theory. But if I assume that both theories are integrable, I can very well compute it for the mirror theory instead of computing it for the physical theory. So I'm writing here what is the final result. I have some free energy. I have some integral equations. I will write more explicitly what this is. I'm just writing for a general system. And let me recall what was the idea. The idea was that some discrete Laplacian acting on this YA would give me something like, which is something like YA plus YA minus, would give me something like, I'm being schematic, I will write properly what it is, which would be something 1 plus YB to the power of some incidence matrix between YB and YA. So we expect that such set of bit equations will describe me the full spectrum of ADS CFT. So the idea is to first write down a free energy, minimize it subject to Beiser-Stadacher equations, apply the Laplacian to this equation, because here we will have complicated kernels, as before. And hopefully, by constructing these combinations, by applying this Laplacian to these equations, these kernels will collapse and will become some localized stuff, and it will become simply something like this. This is our hope, and now I will explain what comes up. Yes?
The difference of the dispersion relation between the two channels
because they're both in
different gauges?
No. So the way we do it in string theory is we fix a gauge in the physical theory. And I say, now I want to study string theory in this fixed gauge. Now I forget it's a string theory, and I say, okay, I have this two-dimensional field theory, which is integrable, finite, etc. How to compute its exact spectrum at finite temperature? I will rotate to some other field theory. This new field theory, this mirror theory, it has no interpretation as a string theory. It is not known whether it comes from some light cone gauge of some background, for example. No one knows. Maybe it's true.
So the issue of the Lagrangian, you can just read
the Lagrangian, I can just write by spending time and space, and then I might wonder, is this new Lagrangian the gauge fixed version of some string theory, and no one knows?
What did you think? Looking through different channels, what do you think that?
Yeah, but it's not covariant, right? I'm fixing it.
Yes, but this is a good point. In Icon gauge, you fix like x plus equal tau.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in the other one, you are fixing sigma equal x
plus. Yeah, it could be. I mean, it was not, but people thought of it and they could not make it rigorous. Okay. So now let me tell you then what happens for ADS CFT. So let me just recall that for SU2, this index A was N, and this N were N strings, and they were very well described by this diagram where I have here N equal 1, etc. Now, for ADS CFT, I can now do the same analysis. So what do? I look at those equations and try to understand. When L goes to infinity, when I am in the thermodynamic limit, where I have lots of particles excited and the size is very big, can I have complex solutions of those equations? And if I can, how do they organize in a complex plane? So how are the complex solutions to those equations?
So this is what I answered when I had this n. It was this n strings. So the answer is that the bound states A, they organize nicely in a plane instead of a line. And the plane is like this. I have some black nodes. I will explain at the level of bound states what they are. Some white nodes. So these are just the several bound states, the several complex solutions of beta equations. And they organize in this way, and they organize in the plane in this way. So each point corresponds to a bound to a complex solution of beta equations. So let me explain what these points are. So this one, this line here, so these black nodes, so here there is a position A and here S. So these black nodes, which correspond to A, comma zero, S is here and A is here. A, comma zero, they are momentum bound states. So they are the usual strings. U minus U prime equal I. They are the usual, the physical bound states, which you read from the phase sigma BES. So the physical, they are the physical bound states. But then in this theory, where the spin waves are very rich, where you have this 2/2, the spin waves themselves can form complex solutions, which will be bound states in isotopic space. That is, even if you freeze these particles and ignore the physical momenta, the spin waves can form bound states and move together. So what happens is that you have here, in this point, it corresponds to this one here. To bound states of SU2, right? So in the Dynkin diagram, it corresponds to exciting n guys here in this SU2, which is in one of the wings. And these guys here, they correspond to the n strings of this extra node here, of this other node here. And then these ones, they are complex solutions made of these three types of roots. These are what we call pyramids, where, and they are configurations of beta roots like this. So you have some beta roots, U3 separated by I. Then you have in the middle of those some U2s, and in the middle of those some U1s. So they describe some truncated pyramid like this. This is also a complex solution of beta equations. So here I'm just telling, okay, so we have a table of possible bound states, and I chose to draw it in this picture. So of course I chose to draw it in this picture because I have in mind already what will be the result of the final equations. But for now I'm just telling you what are the bound states. Is this A, which can be, and the bound states can be nicely put in the plane, in this lattice, and each point corresponds to a complex solution. Next step, I compute the kernel between bound states. I compute the kernel between bound states by multiplying beta equations, and I obtain this KBA. This step I will skip. Finally, the last step. I construct now some nice combinations of this Y, something like Y plus minus, Y plus times Y minus over shifts in Y, hoping that these kernels will collapse and that I will get some simple set of equations. So I'm going to write then what are the final set of equations which we obtain upon this localization by acting with this Laplacian. So these are our proposal for the equations for the exact spectrum of ADS CFT, and I will explain in a minute why this is for the exact spectrum, because you might complain that I'm only describing something which would be the analog of the ground state. My argument so far is for the ground state. So the final result is the following. We have the final the equations which are as follows. We have y a s, so they are parameterized by this a and s plus times y a s minus over, it's a discrete Laplacian, y a plus 1 s, y a minus 1 s, it's equal to 1 plus y a s plus 1, 1 plus y a s minus 1 over 1 plus y a plus 1 s, 1 plus y a minus 1 s. So these are the final equations. This is what we call the Y system. So this equation describes the interaction between all these Ys. You recall what these Ys are. These Ys, from this point of view of originally, they were these densities over densities of holes. So these equations, they are the final equations which are equivalent to the minimization of the free energy. And then the free energy, which is just the ground state energy, is equal to the integral, there is some du over 2 pi I, derivative with respect to u of epsilon a of u times log of 1 plus y a comma 0. And there is a sum when a is equal to 1 to infinity. So these black nodes here, this y a 0, are the ones which carry momenta, like before in our... are the ones which carry momenta, and only these ones entering the expression for the free energy. So I should solve these equations, plug them here, and get the exact spec, and get the spec. And they run from... So S runs from minus infinity to infinity, and A from 1 to infinity. This will be A plus A. It's outside this lattice. Good. So now I want to, so this would be, this equation, ignoring, according to this derivation, would give me the ground state energy of this theory. I start with some integrable theory, which turns out to be this Lightcone gauge. In this Miever theory, I rotate, and I should get the ground state energy. And this could be, I could do it also for some other model, SO4 sigma model, principal chiral field, for some model, and typically I always get this kind of equation. So this is quite universal. So this is encoded by this picture, for example, for the SU2 principal chiral field. It could be a simple picture. There's only one bound state, and then there are two SU2 degrees of freedom. And these equations, for example, were known, and you get something like this. So these equations we studied recently with Volodya Kazakov and Kole Gromov, these equations, and they were actually our main source of inspiration to guess these ones. It was a good time model, this SU2 principal chiral field. You also have some black nodes. They have two SU2 groups, SU2 times SU2. Here it's SU2 slash 2 times SU2 slash 2. And you can repeat the same tricks and compute here.
We did that?
This one we did with Volodya Kazakov and Nikolai Gromov. So we studied.
The principal chiral field was solved before. The way it was solved was not.
It was called the ground state energy, and we computed the full spectrum. So we have this plot with the full lines crossing.
So the full spectrum was not known.
The full spectrum was not known. So, and it was quite important for us to get this inspiration to get what the equation would be. So
what's the difference between white and black nodes?
So they are different from the point of view of bit equations. They are. Each point represents a complex solution of bit equations, right? But these ones, they are the ones which are made out of the roots of the middle node, of U force, okay. The ones which carry momentum. So this is like, if I give you some state like this, and I want to see what is it describing in the spin chain. These ones, they are really describing real bound states where momentum is complex. So they are describing states where the particles are closed. Whereas this one, they describe isotopic degrees of freedom, where the isotopic degrees of freedom are localized. In condensed matter, they have some special name. Okay, so now this would be the ground state, and then there is a brilliant idea by Dorian and Tateo about how to go to excited states. How to consider not only the vacuum but all the states of the field. This is by Dorian and Tateo. So the idea is the idea which they understood was, could it be that
if we start with some L, and if we go around in a complex plane of L, and if we go back to the same point in L, we make an analytic continuation of my energy as function of L, then they claim that the ground state energy would become, as we do this this path in the complex plane, plus the energy of excited state. When I come back, I would have excited the excited states. And this was based on the idea that normally in these theories, in many theories, the energy is a multi-valued function. So when you go to the complex plane, you might be crossing paths that you don't even know that they exist.
So for different excited, you choose a different path?
So for different excited states, so here it's an analytic continuation in L. So now I will explain what it would mean in terms of our language, where we have an integral over U. So if I have some integral, I have my integral in the U plane, right? And it goes over the realized. Now, that it could be that there is some singularity here, some U star, which depends on L. And now I analytically continue my function, which is defined through this integral. What happens? When I analytically continue, it could be that this singularity would approach the realized, therefore obliging me to deform the contour. So at some point, I could have something like this contour here, and the singularity was going here. And I could even imagine more complicated singularities going from the other side. Okay. This is enough. But then what would happen is that I would say, okay, but this is equal to the original contour plus an extra term which would come from this singularity. So what is this singularity in our case? What is this singularity in our case? Well, this singularity is the point where 1 plus y, let's put, for example, 1 for concreteness, is equal to 0. This could be a singularity. Indeed, this log would be singular, right? This would be such singularity. So suppose we are close to this U star. Okay, suppose we are close to this U star, then we will get integral derivative of epsilon 1 times log of some constant U minus U star. We are integrating over this. But then we can integrate by parts. The derivative jumps there. It takes the derivative there. This A is absolutely irrelevant. And what I get here is just epsilon 1 of U star. And therefore, notice the remarkable thing that the energy became just the original energy plus a sum up to n terms of this epsilon 1 of uj. Since we already know about by the Sadaka, let's even put an index 4 here. Where this, let's put no index instead. So we have this uj, where this uj is fixed by the consistency equation that y 1 comma 0 of uj is equal to minus 1. And this is indeed very promising as a conjecture to describe the excited states. We propose that the equations where this y, 1 plus y is never 1 to describe the ground state, and then the solution with extra singularities, with more and more points where this y is equal to 1, would correspond to the several excited states.
So why do you consider only y 1, 0?
I considered only y 1, 0. The other ones would be the equations for the bound states. I'm considering that I'm exciting only particles which are not bound states.
But to get the full spectrum?
To get the full spectrum, I could consider everything. But I'm just, you see here that, and this is basically our main proposal, that these equations, if you could solve these equations, plug into this energy, you would get the full spectrum of EDS here. And this, as I presented, seems completely disconnected from what I supposed
so
before.
The Easton equation is U, Y, H down is 0, both minus 1.
Yeah. So this is an equation on this point UJ, and here it's a set of functional equations. And these functional equations, they have many solutions, and I should say also that we also know the asymptotics of this y's before, because before inverting, you can go to y going to infinity in these equations. Then these kernels are suppressed, and you see that y's, they go basically like the dispersion, which they correspond to. So we also supplement this equation by the boundary conditions, which are that the y, a, comma 0, which are the ones that carry momenta, they behave like x minus over x plus to the l when u goes to infinity. So we have this boundary condition. Sorry, it's a bound state, so there is a here and a here. So, okay, y's behave like that. We have u when u goes to infinity. This is the boundary conditions. These extra points are extra singularities in my solutions, and then the energy is computed by this point.
Can you now?
Yes?
Can you now go back and check if you have a channel duality in finite R in the system?
That I have what?
Channel duality. The theory of the real theory, if you consider the full spectrum, you take out finite, but that goes to infinity, you can still get the same answer.
But they shouldn't give the same answer. The spectra of the two theories is different. They are different theories. One of them has some spectra, the other some other spectra. It's not a relativistic theory.
Cannot map the spectrum of one to the other.
No. I don't think so. Fine, maybe you can, but not in a trivial way.
What's the relation of this extra condition with UJ compared to
Exactly. So that's a good point. So this equation here, we called it the exact opposed to asymptotic. These are the exact Wittgenstein's equations. So whereas those ones are the asymptotic Wittgenstein's equation, this equation should be the exact Wittgenstein's equation. The singularity is always when 1 plus y is minus 1.
Can you get the other by taking some...
This is what I wanted to explain now in the next 15 minutes, is why this proposal now passes all previously known checks. Why it reproduces asymptotic with equations, and why it reproduces Luscher.
So can you think of that solution as sort of in the Miller's theory, the small particle to be excited, say about the Coulomb state, which carries some momentum, parameterized by u, j. Should I think about it that way, or...
No, this is not an excitation in the Miller theory. This is an excitation in the physical theory. So the picture is that in this Miller theory, I computed the minimization of the free energy. So I computed what's the configuration in this free theory. It's like some virtual sea of particles here, which go in this channel. There is some virtual sea of particles, which minimize, which come from delta F equals zero. They have some densities of particles. And then I put some extra physical particle, not Miller one. I put an extra physical particle. And this physical part, apparently, it's not obvious what it is, but we claim that it's like some extra polarization of the vacuum, which is taken into account by this y equal minus 1.
Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to say is that it seems to me that given that in the Miller theory, you have a box, you have a theory where you can see why it seems there may be also a simple interpretation of that in the Miller theory, because I mean, all these spectral special parameters that you are doing down the board right now is a natural interpretation in the Miller theory, not in the theory. Am I saying something?
It could be that they have an interpretation, but notice that for the ground state, my derivation is quite clean, right? But for excited states, it's not from the path integral, it's not obvious. A particle is some extra boundary conditions in the path integral. It's not obvious how to implement it at the level of the original equation.
This statement that the excitation should come from another of the lack energy, then you can, I mean, apparently it's a statement which is independent of this model or integrability.
Yeah.
It's a statement that should be true all the time. So
it's not valid for all models. Probably
it's not.
No one knows it. I mean, why does this work? No one knows. I mean, what
has it been checked in some?
It has been checked. For the SU2 case for Carolfield, which was the one we studied in great detail, we computed completely the spectrum and it matches with Monte Carlo, it matches with.
So you expect this to be true only for that theory, not just as a principle of.
No, this is not a principle of nature. I mean, in general. I mean, energy is simple, right? If we pick energy of hydrogen atom, you cannot analytically continue to get the other states. But for some field, for in field theory.
In finite, I mean, here, yeah, you need to put it in finite.
Yes.
Class,
yes.
So.
I don't think this article, this is certainly not completely general, but it's true in many examples.
Yeah.
In many examples, it's not true, and it's true in many examples. No one knows exactly how general is this, why exactly this should work, but the final results are very convincing. But as many of the things I told you, this subject is completely full of conjectures. Only the one loop, Beaton's hat in Young Mills, is completely safe. The rest, it's built on very wild conjectures.
But the original Dore, they made this conjecture...
They made this conjecture based on the Young-Li model, which they could solve exactly. So there they could check.
Okay.
So basically, the energy was given by a sum of square roots, like some finite, some zero-point energy, and by going in a complex plane, you will flip the signs of some square roots, and you would reboot the sign plus twice the square root, and this would be the excited state, so they could see there very well. This mechanism is very explicit.
So the equations which you have now are functional, they are not algebraic?
They are functional equations, yeah. These equations here are functional, subject to this algebraic condition. It's a functional set of equations, where the index A and S lives in this plane here, in this called T-shaped fat hook, and it's subject with this expert. Okay, now if I have 10 more minutes, I will explain the connection with what we have seen before. So first of all,
So I want now to consider the connection L going to infinity and the connection between Y system and D rota. So it turns out that there is a very nice relation between Y system, the equation for Ys, and the rota equation which I wrote for TAS. And the relation is the following. If I parameterize my y's in the following form, yas as being tas plus 1, tas minus 1, over ta plus 1 s, ta minus 1 s, then the y system turns out to be equivalent to erota. So if I have erota, I immediately, for t's, if I have some t's which obey rota, I immediately get a solution of y system by parameterizing y's in this way.
So what's that?
Y a comes here. This?
Yes.
So let's write first erota. Tas plus tas minus is equal to ta plus 1 s, ta minus 1 s, plus TAS plus 1, TAS minus 1. So you see that Y equal minus 1 means that this term is equal to minus this term when Y is minus 1, because this combination is precisely this over this. So this is 0, so it means that T's will have some zeros at particular points shifted by I over 2. So this Y equal minus 1 will turn out to be some zeros of T's. So we will consider t's with no zeros, it will be the ground state. T's with some zeros, it will be the excited state. So the more zeros we will choose for t's, the more excited state we will be considering.
So you get the right states this way in the language of t?
Yeah. The t's, as I told once, for characters. Recall that for characters, we have both characters and then some y system. And as I told, the characters were more fundamental than these derived y's which I built from characters. In the same way, our claim is that these t's, they are more fundamental than this y's. And now let me explain a bit more this analogy between t's and y's. So y's, they live in this lattice here, right? I'm sorry for using the same picture. So y's, they live in this lattice. But y's, I define them as t's, which are up and down and to the left and to the right of y's. So these t's, the t's which I wrote here, they live in a slightly larger domain than these a's. More precisely, the t's also can also live on these lines. So the t's live on these lines, and also here. So all this region here is where the t's live, and the interior part is where the y's live. The t's live here and here, but the y's only live inside. the white states. And then we have two equations, which so far for you just seem like equivalent. It's hard for you to tell which one is best. One of them lives in the full T system, and the other one lives only in the bulk. Actually, there is a nice interpretation of this T and Y as being the analog of A mu and F mu nu. In the sense that this Hirota equation, it is an equation for A mu, and Y is an equation for F mu nu. In the sense that this equation T, there is a huge gauge symmetry of this equation. So basically T, A, S, I can shift it, for example, in this way, any function of u plus I S over 2 times T of A S. Because you see that here I shift u by 1, here I shift, and here also, plus I A over 2. Here I shift A plus by 1, and here I shift S by 1. So basically this equation is invariant under the symmetry, and also if I put a minus here, and also if I put a minus. So there is a huge gauge symmetry for T's, but Y's are invariant. The Y's are invariant under this. There is no gauge symmetry for Y's. Furthermore, suppose we go then to the boundary here. Here at these boundaries, the Y's are equal to zero or infinity, but okay, they are trivial. What happens then to the T's? Well, like in F mu nu, when F mu nu is zero, I expect A mu to be a pure gauge. Right? Indeed, when I go to the boundary for T, say I am at the boundary, one of those terms is zero, and I get just a discrete Laplace equation. So at the boundary, I get a discrete Laplace equation, which tells me that at the boundary, T is just some function, for example, of U plus IS over 2 plus IA over 2, something like this. It tells me that U, T is just a pure gauge, because I get just Laplace equation, just a plane, the wave equation when I take the log, when I lose these terms. So I have some equation which lives in the bulk, which is the Y system, and some equation for T which lives in the bulk plus this infinity, which is like a gauge parameterized, gauge non-invariant parameterization of Y's. Okay, so it turns out that it's easier to work with T's because we can exploit the gauge invariance. We can exploit the gauge. We can apply this gauge to go from some not so nice gauges to some nicer gauges. Okay, so now I would like to, and this was quite useful in the SO4 story, in the SU2 principal chiral field which we studied. And we believe that this will be quite useful in ADS-CFT, this gauge transformation, but so far we didn't manage to use it very efficiently. So this is something which is not as developed as it is, but I would like to mention this gauge transformation, and especially the fact that at the boundaries, TAS becomes a trivial function. The dependence on A and S become trivial. So how to make contact between these TASs, which I introduced now, and the TASs which I introduced before, which were the transform matrices of 2/2 in several representations? I still have one board. So now, I would like then to make, I understood the connection between T's and Y's, I want to understand the limit when L goes to infinity. So now I want to consider large L limit to show that I get precisely what I should get. So now notice that when L goes to infinity, it's easy to see that these asymptotics here, they hold both from U going to infinity on L going to infinity. Remember that in the original equation, which appears is L times P. So when L goes to infinity, Y A comma 0 become much smaller than 1 because of that asymptotics. And therefore, what happens is that the fat, this T shape, breaks into two T shapes. It becomes decoupled. So I have here the black nodes. And then here the white nodes. And they decouple from one another. Because basically in the equation for these neighbors here, take this equation here, I will have something of 1 plus YA0, and that part I will drop here.
So the middle node wise will decouple and the two wings will completely dissociate. Well, but if they decouple, then what I will have T A S in a fat hook of size 2 by 2. I have, which will live here. This T's will live, recall that it's slightly bigger, T's will live in this fat hook. But what are the solution with T's with this boundary condition? Now it's a different boundary condition. It's the boundary condition that T's can only live when A is positive, when S is positive, and live between this range. Well, but this means that this T, A, S, is precisely the T, right, for example, with A and S that we considered before. They are just transformatrices. This is really just a transformatrix in representation AS, a product of S matrices. This object here, as I told you, it obeys Hirota, which encodes the fusion of these indices AS, and it lives precisely in this fat hook, because the representations, remember when I spoke about character, they needed to live inside this fat hook. So this is the solution which lives in the good domain, which appears when we decouple. So we immediately get that these T's in the larger limit, they are approximately equal to the previous T's that we saw before.
So what you specify this matrix?
No, it does not mean. So I can say how constraining it is for the S matrix. It specifies the matrix part, but not the scalar part. And for the scalar part in sigma BES, I would still need to find it. But it constrains completely this TAS, and this TAS become given by that expression, for example, for T1, and for the other ones by some more complicated expressions for T's. And then, so this was for these nodes here, then we can consider the equations for these nodes. The equation for this node, they are of the form YA0 plus, YA0 minus, over YA plus 1, 0, YA minus 1, 0. It's equal to 1 plus YA1, 1 plus YA minus 1, and then there is this term, 1 plus YA0, A plus 1, 0, 1 plus YA minus 1, 0, and these ones I can drop because Y's are very small, so I get just an array. When I construct 1 plus Y, what do I get when I construct 1 plus y? So if this ratio is y, 1 plus y from Hirota, it's trivial to see that 1 plus y, 1 plus y as from Hirota is just t as plus t as minus over t a plus 1 s t a minus 1 s. So when you plug now this with a equal 1 there, and you compare the left-hand side and the right-hand side, you almost immediately identify what is YA0. And YA0, I recall, it's the important one. It's the one which enters in the energy and the one which gives the bit equations. So then I identify, comparing, that YA, 0, it's equal to the transformatrix with A boxes, precisely what we had for Lusher, the left one, times transformatrix with A boxes for right one. This comes from just identifying the two terms. Notice that S is equal to 1, so this is why this is just symmetric. And then I can have a zero mode of this equation, times a zero mode, something which when I compute this ratio gives 1. What is this zero mode? Well, I know that, for example, it must contain X minus plus X minus over X plus A to the L, because this is the asymptotics, and you can check that this is a zero mode indeed of the equation. So this one must be here for sure because of the asymptotics. And then a priori, I might have some extra zero mode, which I call sigma BES fused. So it's already the fused multiplying with some index A. Okay? In this way, I obtain, in terms of this function, which is still unknown, I could explain how to fix it, but let's for simplicity, assume that I still have the freedom. I got completely what is my YA0 in terms of these transfer matrices of 2/2.
Did it play any role?
Y equal minus 1?
Yes.
Now it will play a role. Now, when I impose that y1 comma 0 is equal to minus 1, I get the asymptotic Ditanzas equation. When I impose that the t's are regular, I get the 3 plus 3 Ditanzas equations, the other ones for the wings. So immediately I recovered all Ditanzas equations we saw before. The middle one encoded by this equal minus 1, as Evgeny said, plus the physical one, the 3 plus 3, which are there. So everything comes out at once. More than that, now we... Yeah?
The equation, if it was y of a0 equal...
y is 0, yeah, sorry. Yeah.
It was not only 1, but a0?
A0, I would get the equations for the fused bound state, if there were fused bound states. But let's consider that we can consider only 1, 0, because the other ones are made out of this one. It's just a subtle thing. So you see that we get immediately this decoupling. They decouple, so t's become just transfer matrices we saw before. Then y's become trivially related to these transfer matrices. Transfer matrices being regular, they imply bit equations for the wings. Y equal minus 1, it gives the bit equation for the physical particle, and I recover the asymptotic spectrum from our y system. But now, notice that I recover more than the asymptotic spectrum. Let's plug this into the energy now. When I plug it into the energy, y's are small. YAS is small. So when I plug this into the energy, I can again expand this log. And the energy becomes given by, first I write the second term, sum of U1 of UJ up to M, where these guys here, we saw that they obey the Beiser-Stadacher equations. It was the first non-trivial check of our equations. I mean, apart from the fact that it was a derivation, but okay, but still we should check it. And indeed, this was the first non-trivial check. And then we have plus some integral du over 2 pi, derivative with respect to u of epsilon a. And then I expand the log and I get just ya0. And where is that? If you compare with the formula which I deleted, let me write again. So this part here, what is this? This is just x minus over x plus, x minus a over x plus a to dl times the transfer, this transfer matrix t. T, which is the product of t left times t right times sigma bes. A. And this is precisely Luscher. So Luscher then comes out perfectly. This y, it gives precisely this y, gives precisely this Luscher contribution, this Luscher correction. So we see that we can reproduce both the we can reproduce everything which is known, basically, so far. So now, why this sigma is this sigma? We can check that if we impose that the y's obey some crossing symmetry relating to x1 over x, we do indeed find the crossing equation for this sigma. So that sigma is a zero mode, so that's a zero mode.
So we have to conjecture the same type of crossing.
We have to conjecture the same type of cross. Yes. Yeah. Alternatively, you can say that we lost, when we take these Laplacians, it's quite powerful because we can use these techniques of Hirota dynamics, and Hirota is an integrable system, discrete, which is very powerful. But it's also, there's also some drawbacks, which is when I apply this Laplacian to build these combinations, I lost all these kernels. Right? I had these kernels. You remember when I built the free energy, I had KB. I have these kernels, KBA, and I lost most of the information about them. And now somehow I must put it back by some analytic properties, Y's. They must come into game again in some way. If I did not use this Y system method, but if instead I had worked with these equations, then the dressing kernel would never be killed, so it would always stay there all the time. So if you want, this is just
I killed it, but then I should put it back again because I know that that's the addressing kernel which I started with. That's not my business. I mean, to find the addressing kernel is my starting point. I start with already the addressing kernel. If I can recover it again, that's better. But I don't need to be able to show that the addressing kernel comes out. It comes from with the mirror theory. So let me then make just some concluding remarks. So first, you might have noticed. So what are the next steps? So so for the future, what would we like to do? Well, what we'd like to do is to plot, for example, something which would be nice, is to plot the anomalous dimension of this Konishi's function of lambda. So I have some nice exact plot for all lambda. What is the anomalous dimension? And this would be an exact interpolation between some known behaviors here and some 12, you recall the computer 12 lambda weak coupling, there is a lambda to the one quarter prediction, to find the full plot of Konishi. In the way, and maybe even more interestingly, more interesting than Konishi, there are also non-trivial checks that we can do of our equations. A powerful prediction that we must check is the so-called BFKL equation. So BFKL, found by Lipatov and collaborators, is an equation which comes out from the study of deep inelastic scattering, and it's an equation which relates the anomalous dimension of these operators with S derivatives and Z as function of which is a prediction for this function as function of S in a particular sense, and the sense is the following: as an analytic continuation, when S goes to -1, which is something strange, I have -1 derivatives, it's like a non-local object, which is called the Pomerance. I get an equation which is something like S plus 1 is equal to lambda times some function which is known of delta plus lambda squared times some function prime, which is also known of delta, function 2, which is also known of delta, plus some function which is not known. It's an inverse relation. Noting that what we find is rather the energy as function of number of particles and not the number of particles as function of the energy. But what is powerful about this relation is that even though it's perturbative, this information gives us an all-order information. More precisely, lambda is g squared. More precisely, it tells us that delta can be expanded when n equals 1 up to infinity. There is a double scaling limit, g squared over s plus 1 to the n. There are poles of many possible orders with some coefficient an plus g squared bn plus etc. This bn is captured by this function, and this an is captured by this function. So only the leading order, the so-called leading order BFKL, allows us to find all these coefficients here when s goes to -1 to all orders in coupling. This was another non-trivial check, which was done recently, which is quite spectacular, which is the following. Suppose you compute this twist operator for any S, for an exact S, and you compute it from the Bittansatz. So you compute the energy as an exact function of S. This is already not completely trivial that you could do it, but you can. For this SL2 operator, you can put it to the Bitt equation and compute the spectrum exactly. Then you can expand close to S equal plus 1. And compare with this BFKL prediction, which came from deep inelastic scattering. What you find is that at one loop, you get a single pole, and the residue is precisely as predicted. At two loops, you get a double pole, and the residue is precisely as predicted. At three loops, you get a triple pole with a precise residue. At four loops, you get a pole over the 7, and nothing works. You compute the exact energy again, coming now from the wrapping interaction, which starts exactly at four loops. It corrects, it kills the 7th pole, and it is precisely a pole of order 4 with the precise coefficient, the sum of the two contributions. So this is a spectacular non-trivial check of this Luscher, that by including this wrapping interactions, the analytic continuation to -1 becomes exactly what we wanted to compute. In our equation should be able to predict all orders for this function. So it should probably reproduce this equation here and even this one. And it should tell us in principle about all this BFKL story, which is very interesting, relating to Pomerance and Gravit and so on. And finally, a last comment about which is related to our work in the SO4, which is maybe a bit more technical. No. which is the following comment. In these integrable systems where we have some Y system, at the end of the day, there is something which is even more powerful than Y system, which is called the Destre-de-Verrier equation, which you might have heard, which is basically one single integral equation replacing this infinite set of functional equations. So it's a non-linear integral equation. And sometimes it's possible to collapse all these integral equations into one single equation, which is called the DDV equation. So in the SO form, in the SU2 principal chiral field, we were able to find this DDV equation using basically this gauge transformation. It was possible to solve this T's explicitly and to find this gauge transformation. And then when you find these DDV equations, you often realize that these DDV equations can be understood as describing some excitations above the antiferromagnetic vacuum of some simple theory. That is, you often understand in these integrable models there is often two alternative descriptions. One of them, in terms of the dressed particles, which have some complicated S matrix, for example, the one which we have in ADS-CFT or in the SO4 model with some gamma functions, etc. And often there is a bare description, which is some very trivial fermion model, which you fill out the Fermi C, and then the fluctuations above this Fermi C are these complicated excitations, which we would see as the magnons, etc. If such description exists of ADS-CFT, if such more fundamental description exists, such that it's a much simpler one, for example, like the Hubbard model, it would be a good candidate. Unfortunately, it did not work. If such underlying description exists for ADS-CFT, it will be found once we will have this DDV equation. This DDV equation will tell us what are the bare kernels, what are the bare structures. So this Hubbard is, maybe at the end of the day, it will be a nice hope to find some nice model. Maybe it will correspond to covariance string quantization, or maybe it will be something else, which might be more fundamental than this light cone one, and such that by filling some vacuum of this model, we would get the effective description, which would be this light cone. So filling this vacuum could be like putting a quanta of momenta until you get this momenta J, something like this. And this could be very similar in spirit with the Hubbard model. Let me just add one more curious fact, that the Hubbard model enters this subject in two different ways. In one way, which is the way I like the most, in the sense that for SU2 up to three loops, if I put it at half filling, as many electron-dense sites with repulsive interaction between electrons, they describe the effective long-range Hamiltonian of N equals 4 up to 3 loops. And another completely different way in which the Hubbard model enters the game is that the S matrix with 2/2 symmetry under change of variables is the same as the R matrix of the Hubbard model, of the Shastri. The Shastri R matrix of the Hubbard model. And this, by the way, is why we could identify so easily all these bound states, because they were known already from the Hubbard model. So, I end with this note that optimistically we will be able in the future to have some plot of Konishi and maybe to learn about many interesting physics and hopefully to understand more about quantizing strings in ADS and learning about gauge theories and maybe finding some even more fundamental description. Okay, thank you.